The Guardian.
Welcome to the Guardian Books podcast, where the author of the best-selling novel What I Loved, Siri Hustvedt, talks about her latest book, The Sorrows of an American. She begins with a short reading from the novel, where the narrator tries to explain how a book began to take shape.
After my father died, I began to fill another notebook, jotting down fragments of conversations that had taken place during the day. My fears about what looked like an imminent invasion of Iraq, dreams I could remember, as well as unexpected associations that arrived from the recesses of my brain. I know that my father's absence had prompted this need to document myself, but as my pen moved over the pages, I understood something else. I wanted to answer the words he had written with my own. I was talking to a dead man.
Siri Hustvedt's latest novel, The Sorrows of an American, charts a year in the life of a New York psychoanalyst following the death of his father. The narrator, Eric Davidson, writes in response to a memoir written by his father, fragments of which appear in the novel. These fragments are in fact drawn from a memoir written by Hustvedt's own father, who died while she was writing the novel. So, Siri, did you find yourself talking to a dead man while you were writing the book?
Yes, I think that this insight that I gave Eric was something that I understood as I was writing the book, that in a funny way, the book didn't only come out of grief after my father died, but a sense for looking for the man and perhaps aspects or qualities of the man that had been hidden from me.
Eric describes how his writing began as jottings of conversations, of dreams and fragments. Is this how you began constructing the novel yourself?
One of the strange things I did early on was I actually sat down with the letters my father had written when he was a soldier in New Guinea and the Philippines and later in Japan in the occupation army to his parents, and I typed the letters. It was a strange but interesting experience because it was a way of entering his voice and some of that experience. Of course, the letters he wrote to his parents were not full of details about war experiences because, first of all, you weren't allowed to tell where you were, and he wanted to keep them cheerful and optimistic.
Is that the first time you'd found yourself writing out somebody else's words in that way?
I think I may have done it with a couple of writers when I was very young, just to feel what their sentences were like in my own mind and in my fingers. But certainly it was one of the very few times I've ever done that.
And did the experience of recreating his words adjust the tone of your novel?
It's possible. I think that I wanted to enter this material as deeply as I could. And, of course, I was writing in a male voice, Eric, this psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and no doubt some of the character of Eric was also drawn from my own father.
Before becoming a psychoanalyst, Eric worked as a hospital psychiatrist. You just mentioned that he's the narrator of the novel is a man, but after the success of What I Loved, writing from the perspective of a male narrator was already familiar territory for you. I was wondering how you found writing from the perspective of a scientist.
Well, of course, I had to do a great deal of research for this. Not so much in psychoanalysis, because that's a field I've been interested in for many, many years, as well as neurology, actually, because I suffer from migraine. So I started investigating my own head, so to speak. But the neurobiology, psychiatry, psychiatric diagnosis, and more particularly pharmacology were fields that I didn't know so much about, and I really steeped myself in that terrain.
Was that in order to grasp the technical vocabulary or the mindset?
I think both the mindset and the vocabulary. Actually, there isn't all that much of this material in the novel, but there's a lot of it under the novel that isn't seen, and I wanted to feel comfortable with the material and not make any errors. I did have a psychiatrist slash psychoanalyst read the book, and he actually had no comments on any of that material, so I felt safe.
tremendous achievement. I was wondering if it was partly the way that you managed to discover Eric's careful, slightly ponderous tone.
Yes, you know, I've actually been hanging out for the last few years with a lot of scientists, neurobiologists, and psychoanalysts, and there is an atmosphere around these personalities often, not always, but often, of a calm, measured cadence to the way they speak that Eric also has. I gave it to Eric. I also conceived of this character as my imaginary brother because he has parents very much like mine. He comes from the world I came from, Minnesota in the Midwest, and Norwegian background. So it's as if I could have had him as a brother. I have three sisters, no brothers, and I think that phantom has been hovering around our family for years. So he finally found some life.
He's, as it were, your analytical, your scientific twin.
My scientific twin, exactly. And I do have great admiration for people in these related fields. And I suppose if I had not become a writer, or if I had become more deeply interested in science earlier, it's something I could well imagine doing.
But throughout the book, there are times when Eric admits that there are things that science doesn't understand or cannot comprehend. Do you think that there's something that novelists can teach scientists about the way that people are put together?
I think many scientists would agree with this, that there are, you know, that poets, novelists, and artists have discovered or written about or depicted material that science comes to later. There are a number of scientists that I've talked to who openly will say that.
As the book progresses, Eric begins to doubt his ability as an analyst and perhaps even the value of therapy at all. I was wondering if the process of writing the book was a therapeutic one for you.
I'm still struggling with this question. I am not sure. I think I had to write the book. It was a book that came out of real emotional need. At the same time, whether that has sort of solved the question of my father's death or whether I've come to terms with it fully, I rather doubt that. I mean, to be really honest.
It's not necessarily the job of art to solve a problem like that, perhaps.
No, I have to say, you know, this question of art as therapy is an interesting one. I do, for this book, I did, and I still am doing it, I teach a writing workshop as a volunteer to psychiatric patients. And one thing I have discovered that I didn't know before was, in fact, it seems to me that while the patients in the room are writing and we're discussing a poem or some literary material, and they've gotten some text out onto the page, that they do feel better, at least momentarily. I have no idea whether it lasts, whether they carry that more buoyant feeling out of the room or not. But that's made me think that actually writing, in some cases, can have therapeutic effects.
I suppose there's a world of difference between writing for yourself and writing for publication, however.
Of course, a world of difference, I think, in the sense that, there are great artists who have written for themselves. You think of Emily Dickinson, who published three poems during her lifetime. So maybe a world of difference isn't exactly right. But it's, I can say this, that most of the work from the psychiatric patients would not be publishable work. Its function is not to be published or thrown out into the world. Its function is, I think, to fix some feelings or emotional material on a page that might surprise them. And that surprise can be interesting.
During the course of the novel, the narrator's sister, Inga, is pursued by a journalist with a grudge and goes through rubbish bins looking for a juicy scandal. I'm wondering if you think that literary journalism has descended to the level of pursuing celebrity chit-chat.
Well, I think in my case, not at all. But I think every once in a while one does see these excesses with, you know, the very famous. But, of course, this particular story, and I won't say how it ends, does have a small twist. And it is the book, to some degree, I began to realize that it's about recognition and recognitions. People, everyone wants to be recognized, I mean, just on a human level. And often people aren't, or mistakes are made. And, you know, facial recognition is actually a neurobiological phenomenon, and, you know, some people lose it.
The experience of seeing someone as if for the first time chimes all the way through the book and is reversed towards the end in a most glorious way. I was wondering, at what stage in the planning of the book did that surprise, did that coup come to you?
You know, I have to say that, I mean, not entirely, but to some degree, my unconscious writes the book. I don't really know what I'm doing. And there was a... rather, there was an incantatory force to this book where I realized that there would be fragments that returned inside the book, and they would be opposed by these more coherent narratives. So some of that I would recognize, ah, this is where this belongs again. But a lot of times it would just come.
It's a very instinctive way of creating the book.
Very instinctive way. And I often find that when I'm really open and unworried, that the best passages would come to me.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.